Welcome into the Draft Report Podcast. I'm Jack Borowski, joined here alongside my co-host, Sam Teets. On this episode, we talk all things quarterbacks, discuss risers, which includes Sam's top 250 big board that was updated, and then finish off the episode with the top prospect we watched recently. Let's start, Sam. You know, crazy week of college football. I feel like rivalry week every year is phenomenal. The best week of college football. We saw Michigan upset Ohio State. That one was great. We saw both of our colleges lose tight ones. Clemson losing to South Carolina, Miami losing to Syracuse. And some other really good games. A&M, Texas. So it was a really good week of college football, and specifically four quarterbacks we're going to be talking about today: Cam Ward versus Syracuse, Carson Beck versus Georgia Tech, which was another one, a good Friday night game, Jalen Milroe versus Auburn, and then Quinn Ewers versus Texas A&M. We've had this Miami discussion a lot that, it's a weird thing where they're 10-2. On paper, they have Mario Cristobal, I think, would maybe be included for a casual fan as a top 20 head coach. They recruit at a high level. They've got a lot of talented players. And we've highlighted a lot, this is such a dysfunctional team that's being elevated by the quarterback. And early on, people would make the excuse, well, he's putting them in the hole sometimes. You really can't come with that excuse for this week if you're a Miami fan. But takeaways from the game and Ward's performance against Syracuse.
Yeah, I thought Ward performed really well in this game. He didn't have that catastrophic play we sometimes talk about him having. Really what hurt them in the end, and I think we talked about this at some point in a previous show, where it feels like they have a lull. Somewhere between the second and third quarter, basically every week, they have a two or three drive series, but are just not quite as potent of an offense. Something happens early. They get a holding call. They get in a third and long situation because they run the ball for 1 yard on first down. They decide to throw a slant or throw something to the flat and second down. They get basically into third and long, and the drive just stalls up very quickly. And it felt like that did happen in this game. That ultimately ended up being a bit of the difference there, was just having, frankly, only one or two drives really stall on them, which is all it took in this game, considering how poorly their defense played. This is an awful defensive unit. Tyler Barron, who I basically been benched, was the best player out there for them. And he played all of 15 snaps, I think. So I don't even know where, I don't want to talk about the defense too much because it's just so insane. But I did think this was a really good game for Cam Ward overall, looking at how he performed in this matchup. You saw the arm velocity. I think he was really dicing up the intermediate part of the field. He had a couple of deep completions. I know the Wonder Strepo, but I felt like he was operating more at the intermediate level for the most part, succeeding in that area generally. And that's where a lot of his big plays came from throughout the course of this game. I do think they really could have used a couple more deep shots, though, if you think about how quickly Syracuse was scoring in some instances. But I don't have any really negatives to take away from Cam Ward. I thought he played this game well. I thought he did a good job buying time when he needed to. He found the right openings. He didn't miss too many throws in this game. I know sometimes I talk about him missing high and wide at the sideline. I don't really think he had that many misfires in this game. In comparison to previous matchups, this might be his third best game of the year. It just happened to come in a matchup where all it took was stalling out one or two drives to cost you the win. And that really comes down to the defense, not Cam Ward.
The defense sucked. I thought one of his best throws was the one over the middle to Sam Brown in a crowded pocket that Sam Brown dropped, which has been a common theme. He's one of the worst wide receivers in the country. After being a guy I thought had a shot to be a first round pick coming into the year. And he was a complete flop. They ran the ball well. I saw certain statistics about maybe we should have run the ball more. It's I don't know, they put 35 points or 38, right? And it's Jacoby George, watching the game live, he had a 15-yard, unsportsmanlike penalty, that takes it from second and goal from the 5 to second and goal to the 20. And Cristobal, you have the best quarterback, you could argue, in the country, and you decide to kick a field goal.
Wild.
and it's your defense, had given up 42 points. If Syracuse wanted to score on that drive, they would have scored on that drive, just running the ball down their throat. They scored every possession in the second half until that last one because the game ended. Horrible coaching job from Miami. Again, they're not an untalented team. They just, everyone around Cam seems to, Restrepo, bad fumble. Isaiah Horton, bad drop. Sam Brown, bad drop. Like little things that, like, easy plays against a bad defense, and they're not making
it. The freshman left tackle with, the penalty. I think it was that the last drive they had where they had the scoring chance, where they had a penalty that just pushed them back?
Markel Bell, I think, is his name. And he's like a JUCO kid, so he's not a freshman, but he plays like one. Yeah, they're just not just gotta tip your cap to what Cam did this year and what he did. It's weird because we talk about strength of schedule was not great. On paper, Miami should be the best team or one of the best teams in the ACC. And week in, week out, it was just Cam bailing them out. And I thought this was as clean of a performance as you can have. Made every throw, didn't make any mistakes. It's just 38 points wasn't enough to beat Syracuse. We talk about these other quarterbacks. And, the score for, let's say, the Georgia Tech game ended up being high. But, Carson Beck, you're like, all right, that defense is going to come through for us. Cam Ward, it's like, I have to score every time I touch the ball and score quickly because they're going to score and I need time to get the ball back. I thought this was a really clean performance. Is this impacting your grade for him in any way?
Not really. I mean, we already know that I liked him a lot, and I think this is not a good enough defense to really push Cam Ward, I think.
Yeah, no, I thought he was great. It's a good way to cap off the season. Hopefully Miami does not deserve to make the college football playoff, so let's hope that this is it.
Can you imagine if we get a college football playoff without Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders?
It sucks because we're like, oh, we could have both of them, and I would have never thought they'd be out, and it's neither one of their faults. That's right. They're just not on great teams, and they're very good quarterbacks who have, I guess it shows, they're winning, in less than ideal situations. So, yeah, that was Cam Ward. Maybe, his last game, he, Shedeur, that we see in college, and then it's pre-draft process stuff from here, both top 32 on your big board. Carson Beck versus Georgia Tech.
Yeah, Beck, I think, is having the games he needs at this point to really resettle his draft stock, because he had some really unwatchable football there for a moment, but this game didn't really move the needle for me as far as getting him too far at the board, but I think it's what he wanted to show with scouts in terms of the ability to play within rhythm, to play under pressure, and to kind of just operate the offense. I don't think he did anything too outstanding. There were some good throws in there, some of which Arian Smith dropped. I think there were a couple nice throws into tight window areas, or even to scoring opportunities that Arian Smith dropped. So he really lost some potential big plays there because of those situations. But I do overall like the soften the rhythm, the processing, the ability to sit back and make the correct plays and reads from the pocket. We saw a lot. We didn't see a lot of that in previous games, and we saw him kind of taking a lot of conservative options. There were some certainly more check down based stuff in this game too, but I do think he had the right approach to this performance. And this is probably up there with his Auburn, Mississippi State stuff. It's some of the best football he's played this year. I will say that the game plan Georgia Tech ran kind of limited what Georgia could do to some extent, as far as their offense, but also the opportunities for Beck to really showcase himself, because Georgia Tech was running the ball and having these long drives. They were taking time off the clock. They were really limiting the number of possessions Georgia would get. So you see the number of the innings thrown, 43 passes, but it didn't really play out that way on the actual game itself, if that makes sense. It doesn't look that way in watching the game. It feels like they were playing much more condensed opportunities and condensed drives than that. So the numbers are a little bit wonky, but overall, I still think it was a good game for Beck.
With Beck, there is an element to him where he's kind of a product of what is around him at times. And I do feel that the Arian Smith is Georgia's Sam Brown, where you keep playing him because he's very talented, but oh my God, they just can't catch the ball or make a good play. So especially as an actual receiver, Arian Smith had a nice play on like a jet sweep. But, you know, like the team leads the league in drops. You know, they don't have a great run game. And, you know, he's just not enough of a playmaker where like what Cam Ward or even Shador, which is more playmaker on the collegiate level, they could, you know, figure things out and muster up something where if the offense isn't going, Carson Beck isn't. And we kind of saw that in the first half. You know, like he's kind of like if you put him in a good situation, he'll do his job well enough. I think the accuracy hasn't been great this year. It's been pretty inconsistent, the decision make. But yeah, he's improving in terms of just what are you doing? You forgot how to play football. It doesn't feel like that's the case anymore. Even though the first half you're down 20-6, it's like this doesn't get better in the second half. Oh my gosh, his stock is tanked.
It does feel more like a, it's more of like a baby steps kind of thing, like baby steps back towards where you want to be. And I do think like that. Yeah, I don't want to. The offensive explosiveness of this team just isn't really there right now. You saw a little bit of it in the second half against Alabama, what they could be at times, but you really haven't gotten that consistently throughout the course of the season. And frankly, I don't know that Carson Beck is going to ever be this this explosive creator for you as a quarterback. I just don't think that's going to be how he plays football. It really hasn't been how he's played football to this point in his career. I know I saw Jim Nagy getting in a debate with Damian Parsons on Twitter about Carson Beck's arm and like what qualifies as like elite arm talent, all kind of stuff. Like I think to us at least, it's pretty clear that he's got an NFL caliber arm, but not anywhere near like the top guys in this draft class. It's really not near the top guys in previous draft class. Like, and when I think about a top end arm, I'm thinking about you've got Cam Ward, Caleb Williams, Drake May. Carson Beck is not in that discussion for me personally, at least. So I think that's how I look at it. Like the tools just are not excellent, and the way he's played throughout the course of his career, like when he tries to hunt big plays, he makes mistakes. So I just don't think we're going to get a version of that from him at any point in his career.
Yeah, it's just was Nagy saying he has an elite arm?
Nagy was kind of like poo-pooing the idea of an elite arm and just saying that like he has a really talented arm. I don't know if he used the word elite, but Nagy was definitely backing Beck. And keep in mind, Nagy has a vested interest in doing that because he wants Beck in Mobile. But Nagy was backing Beck pretty hard in that discussion.
Yeah, just like how high can he go? Like where does the team feel comfortable taking a guy who
is it crazy to think it comes down to the playoff? Like it might really, if he comes out and I don't think he will because he hasn't done it this year, but if he comes out and plays at an elite level or if he's the driving force behind a Georgia playoff run, I still think you might get him taken late first potentially. But if he just continues to play the way he's played up to this point in the season, I think you're looking at second round probably. And you think back in the 40s somewhere is where I would imagine he would drop to. You might actually have a second tier of quarterbacks in this draft class, which we really haven't had in recent years.
Yeah, I don't see a first round pick. I don't know where he goes on day two, but I don't know. Right, when you talk about could he go late first? It's like who's the team that's like, oh yeah, we're bringing in Carson Beck to like what's the upside we're looking at here, and we see what the floor is, and the floor is like. He can have the yips, and this is at Georgia. And if you go to a team that's not great and the situation's a little more difficult, could he just completely flounder? I don't know.
I think that could be the case. Like he gets in his own head a little bit. And he does throw, I will say, he does throw with anticipation. If you look at a bunch of his best throws have been over the middle of the field this year in the intermediate level, where he's able to kind of see the window, anticipate, and put the ball out in space. That does seem to be where he's most comfortable at this point in time. I don't know if he's ever going to be a guy who's going to paint like windows along the sidelines and really feel like he's going to be able to beat safeties, like hit that whole shot to the sideline. I just don't know if he's ever going to be that type of player, anticipating outside on the numbers. But inside between numbers, he does a pretty good job. What was it? Oh, there was at least because we're talking about Beck. I'll bring this up. There was a funny comment today made the podium where he doesn't love to watch football. Is what he said. He told reporters, he said, "I don't love to watch football." And he explained that he doesn't like to watch live games. So watch tape, obviously, to prep for it. But he says watching live games like makes him anxious or makes him like you know, it kind of like makes him anxious as he's trying to like go through everything and like watch it live like it's watching tape. And so he said he doesn't like to watch football. I'm like, will that sit well with people or will that sit poorly? I know how the fans will react, but I'm like, how will evaluators look at something like that and how will they react to that? Like, I just don't know. Like, just a very interesting guy. I think I would need to have like a full 2 or 3 hour discussion with him to really figure out what's going on. I don't think Beck's like, opinion by Beck. I don't think it's rare to have that opinion. Like, you don't like to watch, you play football, you don't like to watch it though on TV. I don't think that's rare to have, but I think it's something as a quarterback you might be better off not saying out loud.
Correct. Right. We go back to the Richardson. Yeah, I was out of breath. Just say, you know, I got a little banged up. Right. Like, there's certain things you don't need to say. Right. Like, people lie all the time. It's a perfect time to be like, I didn't see it. But if the question was like, do you like to watch football? And you'd be like, yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm a quarterback. Or whatever it is. Like, do you watch live games? Yeah. I like football. Like, right? Like, that's the end of it. Not like this whole big thing about, like, you know, I like to watch tape, but I don't like to watch, I don't know. It's like unnecessary.
The worst thing is, like, he opens with, like, I don't like to watch football. And then you see, like, the gears turn in his head where he realizes he has to, like, explain himself now.
Yeah. It's like, just, yeah, don't say that. Jalen Milroe, Beck moving up after that performance, or no?
I mean, I'll probably move up a little bit. Like, I think there's a solid enough set of baseline tools where this guy would probably be drafted second round minimum. So I'll move up a little bit, I think, but not like substantial based off this.
Milroe versus Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be much worse than you play against Oklahoma, so I'll give him props to that. It was a solid game. Like, this was the game you kind of wanted to have where he was pretty efficient as a passer. You had more explosive level plays from him at this point in time. The issue you ran into was ball security this time, though. Where the fumbling came in, I think Jalen McLeod for Auburn had 2 forced fumbles on him. I know I went back and watched that because I was excited to see. I know Auburn's had productive pass rushers this year, but I just haven't watched a ton of Auburn defensive tape. You'll have to forgive me for that. This kind of goes back to the point I've had with him in the past, where he really does rely on his legs to help you win games. Like, if he's running, it's fantastic. You saw against Auburn, he's off. He's all over the place. He had 17 carries in this game and 3 rushing touchdowns. Like, this is what we talk about when you have an elite athlete, and that kind of opens up his ability to win from the pocket or win off platform with the arm talent he has. So he looked much more comfortable and much more natural and mobile in this game. I do wonder, you know, Oklahoma, Venables can scheme up a defense really well. I don't know if he can scheme up a defense that holds Milroe to 15 carries for 7 yards well. So I think that maybe last week, not fully there for Milroe, would be physical, mental, something like that was off. But this week, just really fluid, really loose. Even when he had mistakes, they did kind of keep the game close because of that. But I don't think Milroe really got mentally rattled from the mistakes he made. He was able to kind of bounce back and go back out there and create more explosive plays. So I think this was a good game for him, but not one that really moves the needle as far as what he is. I kind of know what he is as a quarterback right now.
Where was he on your, because Beck was 70, if I'm not mistaken. Where was Milroe?
Let me pull up real quick. Beck was 68. Milroe was 60. So they're not too far apart. I've kind of lumped all these guys together to some extent, but right now he's graded out as like a late second rounder. He has a third round evaluation, but he's positioned as a late second rounder. I do think the ship has kind of sailed on him being that late first round quarterback type. I think we're kind of past that. Most people realize he has to go back to school. I think if anything, the NFL will do the random dart throw on Beck or Drew Aller, which to me makes less sense. But I think the NFL would actually prefer one of those guys over Milroe at this point.
If you're the New York Jets in the second round, who are you taking, Beck or Milroe?
Oh boy.
We don't know head coach or scheme or Rodgers is gone.
If Rodgers is gone,
but like Tyrod's theoretically the guy for next year.
Yeah, if Tyrod's there, I might just take Milroe, honestly. I know no rookie ever sits for a full year anymore, especially in a volatile situation where you have ownership involved in decision making. But Woody Johnson might be going back to the UK as an ambassador, in which case he won't be around the team anymore. So maybe there's a little bit less urgency for putting quarterback out there. I'd probably lean Milroe because we know how the New York market can rattle people. We've seen guys who have had those mental question marks get really rattled in this market before. I think Beck would be under a lot of pressure And plus, Tyrod's been the mobile quarterback before. Like, Tyrod has some knowledge of how to transition and play that role that he can maybe help Milroe with. So I think I would lean Milroe for that situation.
Yeah, if you're, you know, Milroe would be a lot more exciting. I think he can handle the pressure more because we talk about, like, Milroe's, like, more of the project. But I think he's kind of, from what you see on the sideline, how you see them, you know, in their command of the offense, I'd go Milroe over Beck, which I think is more concerning for Beck, and that he's like the pro ready, like guy. Like, usually when you're like pro ready, you're mature, you're the captain, you're on the offense. No, that's all Milroe. He's just struggles a lot as a passer at times. And in the NFL, how can you win games if, you know, right? How can you win games if you're behind with Jalen Milroe as your starting quarterback?
I think the way you would have to do that is have him use his legs, honestly. Like, create explosive plays on the ground so you really loosen up the defense, and then you kind of go for more kill shots downfield. That's how I think you have to do it, because the intermediate level of the field is not going to be of really much use to you with where Milroe is right now, and there'll be some inaccuracies in the short game. So I think that that's really what you have to do. You have to beat them intermediate with your legs almost, and then kind of open things up downfield from there. I will say, for a team like New York, having a mobile quarterback might be a must considering the state of the offensive line right now. So that's going to be another plus in Milroe's favors. He can move. Beck is not a statue, but he's also not a guy who's going to really get out of a money pocket the way you can see a Milroe do.
Yeah, no, that is definitely the case. I would say when you look at Milroe, I do think there's so many similarities to Anthony Richardson, and that, like, I look at Richardson's stat line every week and I'm like, that's Jalen Milroe in the NFL. Like, under 50% completion percentage, but there's a 70-yard pass in there. And the biggest difference between the two is I think Milroe is just such a better runner.
Yeah, you know? I'd be honest, I like Milroe's tape better than I liked Anthony Richardson's tape. I actually have Milroe graded a bit lower because I've become more and more cynical about grading quarterbacks in recent years. But I actually do like Milroe's college tape better than Richardson. I think Richardson might have process things a bit better, but he just was much more inaccurate than Milroe. And Milroe's not, again, not super accurate by any means, but I think that Milroe is more accurate than Richardson. Maybe not the processor Richardson was, but more accurate and more willing to use his physical gifts in situations.
Even, you know, watching Richardson like these last few weeks, because he has played better, which, like, the bar was so low. Palm is, I'm like, this is a great Indian, like, it's a very good offense. Right, like, sure, they could use a tight end, but, like, he's got good weapon. He's got a top three offensive line in the NFL. He's got Jonathan Taylor, and he's just straight up not a, like, an NFL passer. Like, he could make NFL throws from time to time, but, like, he has no idea how much touch to throw, like, to throw balls with, like, velocity, everything. It's just not what he's good at all. Yeah. And they don't use him as a runner as much as they. Well, let me rephrase that. They used to not use him as much as a runner because he got hurt. They're starting to use him more as a runner, but he's just still not Milroe as a runner, and he's just not a good passer. But I just wonder, like Milroe's just not a natural passer. Like, will it just not work because of that? Like, how many guys besides Lamar?
It is really interesting because you brought Richardson. You're right. Like, he's the on-off splits for Indy when he had him on the field for the run game are massive. Like, he's a huge boost to the run game. Not even necessarily when he just as a runner, but just being on the field, he gives him such a boost in the run game. Milroe is a bit more dynamic as a runner, I think, and a bit more, like, explosive, I'd say. That's where the value really comes in. But you mentioned the inconsistency as a passer. It's just wild. Like, I don't see a long-term outcome where Richardson figures this out, and people will point to, oh, well, you have to give him time. Josh Allen's the reason you have to give him time. We did this for Daniel Jones. Like, people did not like Daniel Jones where he got picked coming out of school, and I didn't like him coming out of school. But people liked Richardson because they wanted to believe in the tools of the quarterback. When people were trying to make the argument, oh, Daniel Jones can put it together in year three or year four because Josh Allen did it, everyone was like, that's ridiculous. It'll never happen. But now it's Anthony Richardson, who, granted, is much more tools than Daniel Jones. But we're like, oh, it'll happen for Richardson. No, it won't. Josh Allen's situation is a one-of-one situation. It's never happened in league history before and probably won't happen for another couple of years, like for a good while now. And so I think that's my reason for not wanting to take Milroe that high, is that just that jump doesn't happen. Historically, it's happened once. And so I don't think that will work out for him. Really, the best pathway for a Millward type player might be like a Jalen Hurts route where you change programs. You're kind of forced into an entirely different scheme. You have to kind of play with your training wheels a little bit as a passer, and you kind of like develop from there. You get the full season to really sit in the NFL. That's kind of the route you have to go if you're a Jalen Miller. And of course, Miller's got much better tools than Hurts, though they're kind of built a little bit similarly. I just don't know if Miller will like be willing to take that route.
Yeah, I think he comes out, but maybe transferring out west to USC wouldn't be the worst thing. They'd pay you a ton of money and go work with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Working with Lincoln Riley's teams recently have not been a very winning proposition.
Correct. That is true. This year especially, and even last year too. But yeah, I don't know what you do. I don't mind taking a guy like him in the second round because, like, I do think he could be a really good at a different position. Like, I think running back or wide receiver, like, there is upside there too. It sounds crazy and stupid, but, like, if it just completely does not work out at quarterback, like, we're talking about as special of an athlete as possible. Right, when we talk about, like, tackles who could play guard or guards who could play tackle or center, it's like guys just play one position in the NFL. Like very rarely does a team like moving a guy around all the time if he's good. You just play one spot your entire career, right? We talk about Cody Mock, five position versatility. It's like he's just playing right guard and he'll just play that his whole career, right? Like that's, and so it's like with Milrow, like I wonder if a team could sell themselves like worst case scenario, like we'll figure out a spot for him if he's just an awful quarterback. So,
well, I have heard that Taysom Hill is down for the rest of the season with the season ending injury. So the Saints might be needing a different player to play that role going at the start next year.
There you go.
I understand what you're saying. I don't think Miller and his representation will never like want that to happen. Obviously. They're going to fight tooth and nail to try to get them just play quarterback. But I do see the value of him coming in. Well, to be granted, like to be fair, Taysom Hill is actually kind of a one-on-one guy like that in modern history. And you look at what they do with Justin Fields in Pittsburgh. Justin Fields has some Miller-y stuff to his game as well. I cringe every time Justin Fields steps on the football field for Pittsburgh. I am not in good mental shape when I see Justin Fields on the field in the Steelers jersey. Like it terrifies me what he's about to do when they give him the football. So I don't know that a 2QB system or even a gadget rule is really going to be a good fit for someone like Jalen Milroe.
I agree. I wouldn't draft him, so that's just my thought. What was I going to say? Quinn Ewers versus Texas A&M, renewed rivalry. You know, on the road, they get the win. How do you think he played?
Another game where obviously he wasn't 100%. He had the ankle injury. You saw him scramble early on. He looked pretty good during the scramble. But a lot of floating passes in this game. And that's already something that we've commented on before. He does have a tendency to float instead of drive the ball, although he seemed to have corrected that a bit earlier this year. And we know he has the arm strength to drive the ball. So I do wonder if just planting and driving the way you would traditionally just wasn't comfortable for him in this game. There are so many questions we have around this guy's profile that are hidden by injuries. It's really hard to tell sometimes what's going on with Quinn Ewers. I did think he made some really nice plays. Basically anything going Matthew Golden's way, I like at this point. You know, it's funny. Like anytime he throws to Isaiah Bond, I just don't know what's happening. But when he throws to Matthew Golden, like that's a pretty good pass. So, and probably why I like Matthew Golden so much. But this was a decent game for him if you're taking the injury into account. I didn't love this game overall. Didn't love this performance. Obviously, it's a very talented Texas A&M defense with a good defensive front that was pretty heavily neutralized for the most part by Texas offensive line, even without Kelvin Banks in the lineup, which is insane. But I liked him some of the throws he had to Gunnar Helm. I liked what he did with Matthew Golden at times. I do think that one interception going into the red zone to the right side of the field maybe could have been avoided. But again, I think injuries play a role in his ability to not necessarily drive the ball. So it's kind of an incomplete grade for me for this game because I don't think he was really fully healthy for this performance.
Yeah, I thought, right, like, he started a little, like, off I felt like it was a, you know, you're in a tough atmosphere, right? Like first drive, like his two passes, receivers like didn't know where they like didn't it felt like the offense had no idea what was happening. And then he had that one on the third and two in the red zone where he kind of just like lofted the ball off on an RPO that should have been picked by Will Lee. And then after that, I think people are like, man, that second quarter was great. And then afterwards, like, he didn't play as well. I thought he was good in the second half, too. They just had to, he had the two turnovers, like, inside Texas A&M's 10-yard line. So he got them there. The fumble that he had, I thought was just a phenomenal defensive play. Like, right? Like, I don't know, he's sliding. You know, I don't understand what it's like. You got to bring an arch after that. Like, what? Like, good defensive plays happen. My question with
fumbles
the
fumbles are hard. Fumbles are hard to predict, really.
Yeah. Like, he's sliding, right? Like, he's not doing, he's sliding, probably doesn't think anyone's around him. The guy, you know, punches the ball out. Great defensive play. So, you know, sometimes a defense like Texas A&M's can make a nice play. His interception, my question is, the ball was batted.
Yeah.
People,
I don't really know if the ball was going to get there, though, either way. Like, looking at the way it was lined up.
It wasn't going to get there. Was it? One, I do think he's got a little bit of an issue with batted passes, I think we've seen at the line of scrimmage. He's had some problems with that. But the pick, it was batted at the line of scrimmage. And it's hard for me. Like, I went back and I watched it a few times. It's really hard to know where the ball is going to end up because he has been good on those like tight window, like short area passes to like the sideline. And it went for like a touchdown. I'm not saying it's unlucky. I'm not saying he should have thrown the ball. It was tipped. Let's blame him on that one. I'm not going to blame him on the fumble. I thought he was pretty accurate for the most part from the second quarter on. I would say Isaiah Bond, right? Like, there was that third down where Bond just, I think, ran the wrong route. He has really just, like, I don't know if he's playing hurt, Isaiah Bond, but, like, I'm just watching.
Yeah, I didn't drop him on my big board this month, but that might be something I need to really look into, like, for next month. Because he's not been even remotely productive in this offense, frankly.
No, he hasn't. Maybe there's been a lack of physicality and just like, I guess, being there on his tape. I find him to just be pretty non-existent. If he's playing through a serious injury, he almost also looks disinterested at times out there, right? Like, I don't know if he's just frustrated, he's playing hurt. It's a weird, again, and you know, everyone talks about Sark's offense, like, I don't really love this. Like, I one hand, I think, you know, people harp on, like, you know, so many short passes. I'm like, that's what they want. Right? Yeah. Like, that's what Sark does. These long developing play action passes. I'm like, they can work against, you know, Florida's defense. But, like, there
Georgia.
Were times.
Georgia
yeah, like,
next week.
You're right. Like, it's a little too long developing for the speed you're going up against to have two guys running routes, and you're asking the tight end to go one-on-one against a defensive end while Ewers has his back to the defense. Like, I'm not a huge fan of this offense, and it's also very reliant on these, like, quick swing passes. We saw it early on, right? Like, it's like Quinn had, like, negative passing yards in the, you know, after, like, the first three drives, and it's like, that's what Sark's having him do. I would like to see him outside of, I think he, you know, right, like, I'm starting to see a little bit more of, like, could he play the Tua role in an offense? You know, ball handler, you know, like, layers the ball well enough. I thought the deep ball was good in this game. He had some nice ones, like, you know, kind of protect the quarterback a little bit, make things easy. Like, I think he'd play that role.
Yeah, his ability to layer the ball is excellent. Like, his ability to layer the ball is fantastic. I don't think it was this game. I think it was either Kentucky or Arkansas. There was an incredible one in there where he did an excellent job.
Kentucky, but, yeah.
Yeah, Kentucky. So he's really good at controlling the ball in that sense. Again, I still wish I'd see him drive the ball a little bit more between the numbers. But I do think he's got, obviously, the great arm to work with. The Tua rule makes sense to me because I don't know that he'll be able to enter the NFL. Well, because of where he's playing in college, I don't know if he'll be able to enter the NFL and take on a full slate of like an NFL style offense immediately. I just wish we get to see him in more of a vertical based passing attack this year. I feel like the vertical game has been a bit, I'd say a little bit more non-existent this year compared to last year. Part of that's because of the personnel like they have on the field right now that, you know, you lose Xavier Worthy and Donnie Mitchell and you kind of have to change things up a little bit. But I do wish I could see him play a little bit more vertically this year than we have so far. I think if we had seen more vertical shots, I'd be a bit more open because it has been so much schemed up stuff so far. But again, that's not on Quinn. That's on the offense they're running. That's just how it is.
Yeah. He's a guy I find myself to always watch the All-22 and come away like with a higher opinion than watching live.
Yeah, that was Drake May. That was Drake May for me in like last year's draft. That's who I had the same opinion on.
Yes, he watched live and like he's not out there making. I mean, I thought like the one to Gunnar Helm he had where he like faked out the defender and the kept rolling. Like, but you watch the All-22 and I'm like, all right, the second half. Let me watch this. And I'm like, when the turnovers, like they're a lot less meaningful when you're not watching it live and you're just watching the tape. And because besides those two plays, I thought he did really well from the second quarter on. And so we'll see if he can build on it. He's got he and Beck have a big game upcoming. I personally think there's more of a definitive role that Ewers could play in the NFL. Like I think there's upside in that. Like, I think his arm talent is way better than what we see in college. Does he need to like break away from just Texas to get there? Right. Like, does he just need NFL coaching to like drive the ball here? Like his deep ball, he can throw it effortlessly, like it's nothing. But it's like the timing seems off. Like, where are the receivers and everything? You know, like. I wonder if there's upside here that we haven't seen in college.
I know it's also not a great offense transitioning to the NFL, but I would have loved to have seen him like at Ohio State next year, as opposed to because of the weapons they have there, receiver-wise, are going to be much more reliable than his options at Texas. You have much more diversity of talent there in terms of skill sets. And I know the line's not where it needs to because of injuries, and they'll have guys go to the draft, but I still think they'll probably be able to muster a decent offensive line by next year. Through the portal and all that. So I would have loved to seen him in a different style offense with better receiving options to really play more downfield and have the opportunity to have more one-on-one battles on the outside as opposed to what he's doing right now. I do think the ceiling is definitively higher than someone like Carson Beck at this point, but I also think there's just a really wild card element for me as an evaluator. I think he could be anything at the next level and it wouldn't surprise me right now. I really don't have a great grip on where Quinn Ewers will end up. And that kind of instability really makes me want to sway away from him in terms of like, if my team drafted him, would I be happy? Probably not as of right now.
Here's my thing is like, if you're Seattle and you make the playoffs, and you want to take a quarterback this year, let's say Cam and Schroeder go 2-3. Is it like, because my problem with Milrow is like, right, we talk about like I think he's got a higher ceiling than Beck, and I think he's got a higher floor than Milrow. It's just this weird thing with these because it's those three quarterbacks. Because I don't think Aller declares.
Yeah, what are the odds that all three of them just aren't very good? that none of them work out at the NFL level.
I think it's the case with a lot of quarterbacks. To me, just like you talk about like arm talent with him, like. He has won a lot of big games. If you put together a highlight reel of his as a passer, I think it's significantly better than Beck and Milrow. It's just like, you know, he was the number one recruit in the country, like the number one recruit of all time. He does have phenomenal arm talent. He doesn't seem to always use it. He seems like he's touch. Can we get that out of him?
Yeah.
Where he starts driving the ball. Can we fix the timing on the deep ball a little bit more?
Yep. Yeah, I think still tough for me to project, but I do think, like you said, this year there's going to be a middle class of quarterbacks in this draft class. We don't generally don't see. They usually go all at the top, and there's a huge gap. I think there's going to be this middle grouping of guys will go in the like late teens to early 40s range. I do think yours will be in that group. But I don't know. You know, I'm not looking at him early in the draft. I don't think you can really, based off what's happened this year, go to an owner and say, I'm going to bet my job on taking one, like Melro, yours, or Beck somewhere in the top 12. Like, I just don't think you can do that to yourself.
If you had to take, yeah, it's like one of them 20 to, do you think all of them go before pick 50? Or yeah. 64?
Yeah, I think, well, definitely before 64, but I think before pick 50. It's funny because last year I thought you were going to get Penix and Nix in there at some point. I never thought they were all going to go first round, but they did. I thought you would get like those guys in the second round. The fact that they went as high as they did makes me wonder, will we get these guys going higher? Because those players drafted last year, like Bonix is playing, I don't know if you caught last night's game, like Bonix is playing really well now. I know they changed stuff to that scheme or not like that with Sean Payton, but Bonix is playing well right now. Caleb Williams is starting to show stuff. Drake May has played well for what he has to work with. You know, these quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels has played well this year. Like the quarterbacks who have come in and know they need development have actually started to play well for the NFL. And I wonder if those guys all finish on a high note, if it inspires more teams to take more shots this coming year's draft. And maybe at the beginning of the year, we're like, oh my gosh, all these guys failed. We're going to see all these teams dump these quarterbacks and go low. Maybe we actually see teams buy into them a little bit more in the first round than we're expecting.
Yeah, like does Seattle, does Los Angeles, does one of these teams, you know, they make it close to the playoffs or to the playoffs, and like Geno and Stafford aren't going to be here forever, and we have an opportunity to take a guy this year. Last question on the quarterbacks for you, because with Nix and Penix, just them as prospects, I'm going to not put Milroe in this category with them because he's his own unique of it's going to take a lot of buy-in from a team, and it's going to be like a unique thing with him. With the other two though, because like Jim Nagy, I listened to something with him last night. He's like, yeah, I spoke to a GM, he's got a third round grade on Riley Leonard. Like, I'm like, if these teams have thirds on Riley Leonard, let's just like Beck and Ewers, comparing them to comparing the two of them to Nix and Penix.
Yeah.
How big of a gap is there? Is there?
So there's not a big gap for me because I had Nix and Penix both pretty low on my rank because I had them both in third round range, which is where I have these guys right now. They actually would be like within 10 spots of each other, I think, on the ranks. If you were to go last year, they're all very close together in the similar range. So I think they're in the same bucket for me as evaluators. The difference being that, you know, Penix and Nix are both like Heisman level candidates in their final season in terms of their production. And we've seen less of that from Ewers and Milroe, partially because of injuries for Ewers, Milroe more because of he's just so ground based. That if you combine like those yards together, total yards is good, but passing yards is just not that level of passer. Whereas Nix and Penix had all the reps in the world. They've been in college for forever. They have really developed as pocket passers and guys who really saw the game at a high level. We've got these other guys here who now Milrow underdeveloped as a passer. Ewers has missed in time with injuries and seems to kind of fluctuate at times because partially because of injuries, partially because maybe gets knocked off his mental state a little bit. So it's a bit different in that. I think Nix and Penix were not as toolsy as these guys, but I think they were much more mentally mature because they've been in college for forever.
Yeah. And one of the things I will say is, and I do wonder this, like how much of like the SEC is tough this year. Like I know everyone's like, oh, none of these SEC teams are good. No, they're all at least solid to good. And it's hard to do this every week, right? Like I'm sorry, you throw Texas into the Pac-12 like of last year, which is what Oregon was in the Pac-12 or Washington was. And it probably looks similar enough. Like I do wonder where Nix and Penix, like we saw Nix in the SEC. Like I do wonder where Nix and Penix would be if they had to play, you know, SEC teams every week where just the talent level is better so you can lose any game, have a bad performance. You know, like they didn't have to really, they just had to play each other, right? Like that was it.
Yeah, I wonder where Shadura would be if Shadura had to play SEC teams to Colorado every week. I mean, we saw what happened in the one Big Ten team, and it wasn't good showing. And he played the cupcake rest of the Big 12. You know, and Shadura's a good quarterback, but to your point, yeah, there are guys who definitely have it easier than others.
No, like, I know they're on good teams, but we got three SEC quarterbacks here, and it's not super, super easy. But I think more Milroe and Ewers have chance to elevate themselves than Beck does. Because I just think Beck, like, I think if he does what he did against Tennessee every week and they win the national championship, yeah, he's a first-round pick. Awesome. But I just don't think he's got the same upside the other two have. Milroe plays like he did against in the first half against Georgia. Like, I'm very skeptical that happens when they make the playoffs, but if he does play like that and goes on a run, there's a shot he does. If Ewers plays like he did against Michigan or Alabama last year, one of those types of games. And, you know, if one of these teams with a national championship, their quarterback's going in the first round, right? Like, that's just what's going to happen. So we'll see, right? Like, if the line's set at 2.5, do you think we're going under or over?
I know what history will tell you, it's got to go over. I'm going to just say under for now, because I do. Every part of me is telling me logically it'll be over because you have so many options, but I'm just going to go under because I think this might be a year the NFL zags instead of zigs. So I'll take the under for now.
Yeah, I'd probably go 3, that just one of those three gets in there, like, in some way, but I understand being low in that. So yeah, that was Cam Ward, Carson Beck, Jalen Milroe. Quinn, your last thing with you, is it impacting his stock in any way this game?
No, not really. See, again, he's playing not 100%, so I think that I'll let him go with this one because of the injuries.
All right, updated big board up to 250. Quickly, what do you think? We're a few months into, I know we talked about all this class sucks, this class sucks. It doesn't suck as much as everyone says it does, and then take me through your four risers for the week.
Yeah, I think this is not a great class. I have found more second round talent the more I look. So the more comfortable I become with the class overall. I think early in the year I said I hated the edge class. I still think the edge class doesn't have fantastic talent, but you've got Abdul Carter seems to be the guy in the class. James Pierce has stabilized after a rough first month. And I found a lot of guys who I like as second round graded edge rushers will go in the first round. So I like the edge class a lot more now than I did earlier in the year. But overall, you're still lacking top-end talent. I think there's a couple guys that have shown up, like Ashton Gentry being who he is has been huge this year. Obviously, Abdul Carter figuring out how to rush the pass from the outside has been fantastic. You know, Mason Graham, Travis Hunter been who they are. We knew what Will Johnson was. I do think this wide receiver class might just stink, to be honest with you. I think that's one of my conclusions. That I've got McMillan still ranked pretty high. I got Burns still ranked pretty high. I got Bond up there. Ekbuka up there, but looking at them and comparing them to the top ranked receivers that I've had in other classes, like, this is really not a great group. You know, it's not. And there's a huge gap in wide receiver from Ekbuka at like 16 all the way down to, I think it's Matthew Gold. No, it's, yeah, Matthew Gold and Trey Harris, 42 and 44. There's no wide receivers in that gap. And then you get some third round guys. So this is really a depleted wide receiver class. I don't like that at all. Throughout the course of the year, there have been enough risers that I feel much more comfortable with this class as a whole. But I still think this lags behind the past couple of drafts pretty significantly.
Yeah, I think it's like the worst receiver class I've ever seen, to be honest here. Like, I guess 23 with the Smith and Jigba year. I don't even, like, because there was still a bunch of guys in there, like the day two range. I would take Ladd McConkey over pretty much all these guys. Right, like, I know we were high on Ladd, but like, I'm sitting here like, give me Ladd, Keon Coleman, A.D. Mitchell. Yeah, you go through, like, when I go Xavier Leggett over everyone besides Burden and let's say Travis Hunter plays cornerback. Like, yeah, pretty much. Like, I think receiver class stinks. Like, we talked about Isaiah Bond earlier. Like, that's a first round. Like, I don't think a team's taking that guy in the first round. I think, like, he's either playing hurt or he's disinterested in soft because, like, he's not like, oh my God. Like, look, I think people, like, over, like, teams can be, I think Xavier Worthy not killing it this year, right? Like, the Texas receiver's a little iffy there. I don't know about him. I wanted to really like him before the year, but I'm starting to be like, eh, like, I don't know if he has it. Egbuka, yeah. You're way higher on than me. Like, Trey Harris and Matthew Golden, like, that's like, are you serious? Like, that's like, right? Like, I see Jalen Royals high in all these rankings. Restrepo, who's like 5'8". I'm like, I got 20 receivers last year that I'd take over, like, wide receiver 6 in this class. Right? Like,
yeah, it's not good grouping. Like, it really is not. And injuries certainly haven't helped out. But it's just such a barren class. I tweeted out, like, there's 20 or so edge rushers I could see being top 100 picks in this year's class. There's maybe, I mean, not even half that wide receiver, really. It's a really depleted wide receiver class.
Yeah, and there's not even, like, some sneaky guy either. It's just, like, they, like, think about all the top-tier teams, and, like, there aren't many, like, high-end receivers. You know, right? Like, it's a good tight end class, you know, like, if you need a weapon. Kind of like 23. Yo, stunk at receiver, really good at tight end.
Yeah, that's kind of where that's kind of how I view it, too. Like, it's just not if you need wide receiver help, it's just not going to be a great year for you. You're going to probably end up reaching.
Yeah, no, receiver, you're going to reach. Tackle's not good. They're all guard size. I think Will Campbell is clearly a guard. You know, defensive wise, corner got a lot thinner at the top. Safety, right? Like, these injuries have killed this class. Linebacker's never good. D tackle probably the best, but
yeah, I think, yeah, linebacker for me has been a position that's gained a decent amount of ground throughout the course of the year. Obviously, I think Jalen Walker, you classify him more as an edge than a true linebacker, though he plays a little bit of both. Like, with Campbell being as good as he is, you've got a number of other guys who could see being top 100 players. Lawson going down with probably an Achilles injury really is not ideal.
It kills the class.
It really does take a lot of air out of it. Because you knock out, you can't. There were like 5 linebackers I think could be top 5 or 6, and losing one of them really is a heavy blow. But in terms of overall talent, I do think this linebacker class is better than I gave it credit for going into the year.
That's interesting. All right. Campbell, I want to – let's count Walker as an edge because that's why I like him the best. So Campbell, Lawson off of an Achilles. It's an Achilles. You think it's a tear?
I don't know. I was just going off of what I think I saw watching the replay. So I think it was a significant ligament injury. Let's put it that way.
Who are the other few?
So it'll probably be Barton, I think.
Okay.
Chris Paul Jr., Barrett Carter.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris
Paul. And then the other guy who, like, I think is good, but it's been hurt the entire year, is Small Mondo, who we've talked about for 2 years now. Like,
yeah.
And that's, I know it's not exciting in any way, shape, or form, but it is way better than I thought it was going to be, which probably speaks to how low I was on the class.
It's always so bad. It's always so bad, linebacker. So that's actually better than I remember. So that's why, last thing, and then we'll go to your risers from your big board, is when we talk about Cam Ward and Shador, and it's like, I can't take them this high. It's like, who are you take? Like, we need a left tackle. It's like, well, who's the, like, just say a team is debating, which this should never be the case, but we're going to make this up for argument's sake. Do we go quarterback or do we go left tackle? It's like, well, who's the game changer left tackle? I was like, I think most of them are guards besides Josh Simmons, who's coming off a serious injury, right? Like, edge rusher wise is like, right? Like, we're looking at Abdul Carter, I guess, but like, he's not, I don't think, like, I'd have Lot to inverse right in the same conversation as him. And they went 15th and 19th. Like, I don't think we're talking about, like, he's Chase Young, Bosa, you know, like Josh Allen, you know, like one of those level of prospects. He's really good, but like, I'm not like we're missing out on like the guy. And then, you know, like, he would be the only argument, like D tackle wise, like, I don't think Mason Graham is like, oh my gosh, like we're like Quinn and Williams level of a prospect, right? Like, yeah, more in that Christian Wilkins range, which is awesome. Christian Wilkins was what, like 13th pick in the draft? So that's my thing, is right, like, sure, Travis Hunter would be the one, I guess, or you could argue Will Johnson, but like they're cornerbacks, right? Like, so it's just more of my thing is like, does it make like Raiders and Giants when we talk about like, oh, I wouldn't take Cam Ward or Shador two or three, like, or one? Is
Yeah,
who?
there's just not the value at, I see what you're saying. There's not the value at left tackle. There's not the value at receiver. So is there anyone else that would
Yeah.
really be tempting more than taking a quarterback? Now, from a value position wise, that makes total sense. But from a, oh crap, I'm going to lose my job sense, it might just be easier to take Colston Loveland or take the tight end, like take the players going to give you 900 plus yards a year of offense than it would be to take the quarterback who might just be on the bench by the end of year two and might just be dead weight on your roster.
But here's my thing. We talked about this last week. I don't want to keep going with it, but like let's say with the Giants, it's like they give Joe Shane another chance to like take the quarterback. Does he feel bad about like we're sitting here at three and we're passing up on, you know, Mykel Williams and Mason Graham and like, 'cause let's say Travis Hunter goes one to the Jaguars and you know you're getting a good wide receiver or cornerback and Shador and Cam go two and three. Like, I'm not like, oh my God, they missed out on Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers. They did like last year's class. Like, there's just none of them that are that good. Like, who aren't like Will Johnson or Travis Hunter? Like, the rest of them, it's like, you can find that same guy at 12 in most draft classes. Yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I understand it. I just again, I'm more risk averse than I think you are with the quarterback, so I understand the value. I think some of those guys will have to make that bet on taking a quarterback there. But again, if you have options, I wouldn't want to buy into this quarterback class. I just wouldn't want to.
What I don't think we're going to look back at is remember 2021 draft, you know, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, and you go look at that top like 14 and every other pick besides quarterback. And I guess Kyle Pitts is awesome. And it's like,
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to have that this year. We're like, oh my gosh, like the Jets really took him at two, like Zach Wilson or San Fran traded all that to get up to three. It's like you passed on Ja'Marr Chase, Sewell, Rashawn Slater, Micah Parsons, Devonta Smith. Like, we don't have that this year, right? It's like, you're more passing up on Jameson Williams than anything else. You know, like that's how it kind of feels. So that was my last thing on the quarterback point of not a good class. So like, I guess I'd feel less mad if my GM kind of like 23, like Colts are picking four. Ursae says to Ballard, all right, finally, you have to take the quarterback because we can't keep doing this anymore. We can't keep not having a fresh face. And has it worked out? Probably not. But you know, like that's just what happens. Owners get involved and they say draft a quarterback. So Raiders and Giants, that's what's going to be happening with you guys and your less than ideal ownership situations that you have. All right, your risers, updated top 250, your four names.
Yeah, I moved Chris Paul Jr., the linebacker from Ole Miss, up quite a bit. He's up to 88 on my board now. Going back and watching his tape, especially it caught my eye versus Mississippi State and spending more time with him and the Ole Miss defense. Really explosive athlete. I think he's still trying to put it all together in terms of playing in space, playing in coverage, and sometimes the run fits aren't there. But the athlete he is really what made me want to buy in because he has coverage upside. He's got really good twitchiness. And you see sometimes he's really nice and distinctive run fits as well coming downhill. So I moved him quite a bit because he's a superb athlete. He's going to test fantastic. I think the flashes he's shown this year are starter level potential. Just needs to be more consistent.
I think he's really helped out the linebacker class. Every time I watch Ole Miss, he's been really impressive. I actually liked him at Arkansas a decent amount last year. I thought he played pretty well. His dad, I think, was a coach at Arkansas and now is at Ole Miss, so that's why he transferred there. Guy we talked about a bunch, Darren Porter, the cornerback at Iowa State, who blocked a field goal on or on against Kansas State. So
Yeah,
he keeps
now
doing
it's
that.
five blocks in his career now. So you're at least getting a good special teamer. This is how you save yourself. You're at least getting a good special teamer wherever you draft him. But looking through the course of his game, it's still weird. He's not being like not playing full time starting snaps. It's still a bit odd. You're gonna have to square that with yourself going into this process. But there are some physical limitations because he is so tall and so lean, but he's extremely quick going down, working downfield. He's a recent transition to the position. He's learned pretty quickly. And just going through the games he had the past month or so, I was pretty impressed with how he performed in coverage and how he was able to eliminate target windows and then how he played the ball when he was targeted. Hasn't seen a lot of targets this year just because, again, playing limited snaps, more of like a third cornerback in a rotation for Iowa State. Because they play a lot. They do have like a lot of three safety kind of stuff sometimes. But just a good athlete who I think has learned the position pretty quickly. And I've been impressed with when he's been tested so far this year. Still a project player, which is why he's at 91, but certainly a lot to like about his game.
He would not be a guy I'd want to draft. I know,
that's why I got 91. Like, third round, you start throwing some darts here, like,
because I'm starting to see him creeping up. It's like we're talking second round. Like, is this guy a top 5 to 7 corner in the draft? It's like, I just can't get on board. He's 24, he has like 200 career snaps at cornerback. He's not like this ideal scheme fit for everyone. I get you are getting an elite special teamer. Like, that is a baseline of what you're getting. And so could a team, like, weak draft class, second round, like, worst case, we have a stud special teamer. He's going to run like the wind. He's going to test off the charts. We're like, he's going to be 24 years old as a rookie, and he's not a full-time starter in years. Was it? He's 2019 class, year 6 in college. I know, like, the raw factor, but, like, you're not getting this 20-year-old who's raw at corner. Like, he's 24. I don't know. I'm not usually a big age guy, but I am at corner because we see the second you turn 29, it's like 37 at left tackle.
Yeah, you drop off immediately.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I'm fine taking a 24-year-old because those guys can be good players at 31. 30. Like, Trent Williams and Lane Johnson are the two best tacklers in the NFL. There was a 2013, 24. They were very long time ago NFL draft, fourth. I think both went fourth overall. And guess what? Like, how many corners do we know who are 32 years old who are still killing it in the NFL? Right? Like, Tre'Davious White is, like, now on the he's on the Ravens now. Is like,
he's on his third team in the past 16 months.
Right? Like there's a lot of them who are just trying to hang on. Very rarely does the guy who was, you know, like Pat Surtain in 4 years, will he be the best corner in the league? I don't know. But guess what? I think he is Darian Porter's age now. So, you know, right? Like, it's funny to think about. But right, when we're talking about a second round pick here, it just feels like the one of the few positions where I would factor in age, and he's incredibly raw. So,
He probably will go that high. But again, I got 91, so second half of the third round for me. So,
oh, absolutely. You take a shot on him there. I wouldn't want to touch him in the second round. R. Mason Thomas from Oklahoma.
I talked a little bit about him last week. Just a really explosive and loose athlete. Doesn't have great length. You can see the pass rush plan is kind of just starting to really get put together for him. I don't think he'll come out in this class, but I did want to include him on the rankings here just so I could have my flag planted for next year. He is a really impressive overall athlete. Plays with a great motor. The questions for me again will be like the size and length situation, but superb in terms of ball of clay with a really impressive tool, like really impressive starting level for him. But you just have to get consistency right now. Like, if this guy was a DPR, that'd be great for Oklahoma, but he's starting, so you need to get him to have a few more impact plays per game. He beat Will Campbell really cleanly against LSU. This is why I'm bringing him up here and why I have him so probably played in him as so I just seen that rip against Will Campbell where he planted Garrett Nussmeier. He can be the lead talent. Like, he has that ability. He can be the lead players. And he can stress elite players out. So I wanted to have him here. Again, don't expect him to come out this class, but he is a player to watch going forward.
How does he compare quickly to Nick Benito, if you remember him from?
Yeah, no. So Benito, I think he's got better arm length than Nick Benito. I think Benito had a much better, like, much better hand usage and true passers playing an idea of what he was doing going in. But I think that Thomas is actually more explosive, I would say. Has a bit more speed to him, a bit more, certainly more bend to him. And there is a speed to power element he can unlock at times. I think Benito didn't necessarily have that to his game. Benito will not test as well as Armis and Thomas will. But again, Thomas doesn't have the pass rush plan that Benito had. Benito's hand usage was much more refined. You kind of knew what you were getting. And I was pretty high on Benito in comparison to where some evaluators were like, I wouldn't take him until late in top 100 type stuff. Like, I was higher on Benito than that. I think I had a second rounder on him, but arm, Mason Thomas, that has more long-term potential, just is not refined at all.
Oh, yeah. I remember going back in your rankings. You had Benito pretty high, definitely top 50. And he's, what, like second in the league in sacks. So just interesting. Yeah,
he's turned out pretty well.
Yeah, that was a big-time hit for you. Do you think he goes back to school? He ends up as a two?
I think so. I think in the summer, I'd be projecting him as a two. Yeah, if he went back.
Oladejo. I don't know. I can't. This is like our fourth straight week of talking about this guy.
I just wanted to say the name one more time. I don't actually want to talk about him. I just wanted to hear you say the name.
You don't even have him ranked. You just put him on the sheet now. What made you add him as a riser?
Yeah, so I moved him up to 147. So still not super high. I know that teams will probably draft him higher than that, and I'm okay with that. There's a class of these players, my rankings, where I have them, and I'll say like the 147-ish range. Let me find it real quick. Yeah, this range from like 143 or 142, and it's like 56, 57. Like maybe even like 160. I expect that whole group to go much like a full round and a half higher than I have them ranked, at least. I just feel a difference right now. And those guys will move up once other players decide to go back to school or whatnot. But I think that this is a player who will go higher than he is ranked. I just think that I've seen enough flashes from him to actually believe he can become a legit pass rusher. I just wish he had one more year of eligibility, because I think he needs one more year of true development at the position before I really buy in him being like a potential star level player. I just don't know if we'll get that in the NFL, but I think this is a draft and stash type player on day three. Like, you take him, stash him for a year, let him figure it out, and then hopefully you buy your like late year two, early year three, you have a guy who can play a pretty hefty low snaps. Kind of be like a, not same style player, but like a Nick Herbig kind of player in terms of like the where he sits in your team, the role he fills. That's what you're kind of hoping for, I think.
Yeah, I think like a team like Baltimore, like your Tavius Robinson type, guy you take in the fourth round. And then, you know, towards the end of year two, year three, you start to see some things come together for him. Ballers for the week. We got a couple Ohio State guys. Always love to see. Nah, I'm kidding, but...
Yeah,
Quinshon Judkins.
Yeah, it's been tough. Quinshon Judkins and Denzel Burke. So Judkins just is a really good straight line athlete, but not super twitchy for me. Doesn't have great power. I know he's got a really killer stiff arm, but in terms of like true, I'm going to run through your power, it's not there for me. When I watch him and Trevion Henderson to me is just a much more natural running back. Like, Henderson has a really good feel for holes, where to go. In terms of like acceleration, deceleration, he's just a much more natural player. And Judkins looks so forced at times. I just don't see it with him. Whatever that spark is, I just don't see it. I know he's super productive at Ole Miss. I just do not see a starting caliber player or a guy who can really offer you high-level reps. So he's down at 122 for me. And then Denzel Burke is down to 103. So outside the top 100, probably like the first time in, well, probably ever since I started grading him like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. I mean, it just gets worse every time I watch him. Like, it really, there are plays from I've watched him and like, oh, look at that player. It's Igbenosi. He's grabbing again. I can't believe it. And then you zoom in and it's Denzel Burke. I'm like, what's he doing? Like, he should not be the one of these two guys who gets put in these negative situations with bad leverage and all that stuff. And I can say he's letting guys get open where they just should not be openings. I don't see a starter. I think this guy is going to potentially, it's going to be a crash and burn stock situation with Burke. I really think it's been awful this year, and I don't think it's gotten much better.
That's why you come out.
Yeah. Don't like go for the money. Like that. I've always said, so you have like top 50 grades and you're like not a sure thing, go. Like, you have to take the money, take the sure bet.
Yeah. I don't understand. Like, because here's the thing, we talk about it with, guys playing poorly, and then there's the injury. Like, if you're healthy and you're a top 100 pick, anything can happen the next year, right? You tear your Achilles.
How many
ACL.
Top 100 guys are healthy on my board? Like, there's like 12 top 100 players who are injured or have season-ending injuries on my board right now. Like,
yeah, I don't understand guys like, and these schools do a good job of convincing them that they won't be high draft picks, even though you can't even name 100 guys deserving of going top 100 by the end of things. And it's just like, and that's also like an arbitrary number, like top three rounds. Like, I mean, like the difference between like the early fourth and late third is not much, but yeah.
It's so frustrating when this stuff happens. But I mean, look at it this way: if you're a top 50 pick at corner in the NFL and you don't do well, well, you might get cut. But someone's going to sign you. Like, you're going to get who was the player? Like, I can't remember the name. Forbes, who just got cut from Washington, but is already signed by the Rams. Like, picked up off waivers. Like, it's just like, if you are a high draft pick, you will get endless opportunities. If you are a corner, an offensive lineman, a receiver, or a quarterback, you will get endless opportunities in the NFL. Even if you stink, you will still get probably at least 6 or 7 years in the league to make money that way. And so, but if you go back to school and you get picked in the 4th to 7th round, you're out in 3 years, and that's it.
Well, think about the Commanders, a perfect example. Noah Igbinoghene is starting for them. First round pick in Miami, he's horrible there. He goes to Dallas with Dan Quinn. I didn't think he was very good there either. Dan Quinn likes him, brings him to Washington, and they suck, so he plays. Well, all those positions, the only thing you got wrong is once those corners turn 29 years old, stops happening. So then they'll just bring back. But like Andrew Booth got opportunities, right? Like they'll just keep giving you chances because these corners are traits. All right. Denzel Burke, is this going to be Kalen King with better size?
Well, I think he's going to test better than King. Like, Kalen King's testing was horrendous. I was like 21st percentile.
I don't think I expect when he ran that 40-yard dash time, I was like, it's over.
Yeah. I didn't expect like the profile to be red. Like, I thought there'd be some like yellow to it and some green, but I didn't expect red.
Red all the way.
No, I think Burke, if you had to point to a cornerback in this class where like that could be the case, it probably is Burke. I don't think it'll be a Revell because Revell has length and he's come off the injury, so I don't know if he'll even run, but that's the only other guy I could see because a small school guy with a major injury, but I would probably pick Burke considering just the vibes around Burke are at all-time levels of bad right now. I don't know what can fix it.
Yeah, it's a confidence position too. Now he's got the playoff upcoming and like an early exit, he doesn't play well. It's just like we have a horrible taste in evaluators' mouth. Next up for you.
Well, speaking of leaving a horrible taste in evaluators' mouth, Patrick Peyton, who, I mean, maybe could have come out last year. I don't know. But like down to below 200 at this point, all the Florida State guys are just catching hands right now. I can't believe it. Like, it's such a, you enter the year with so much talent on the defensive line. They're all just awful. And I understand that. Oh, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Gerald Jackson is going to get Peyton probably in the 3rd or 4th round because he's, you know, height, weight, length, speed kind of guy. Maybe not so much the speed part, but just like massive guy with long arms. Patrick Peyton, I didn't see it in the summer. I think I had like a 3rd or 4th, 3rd to 4 on him in the summer. He doesn't have power. He doesn't have great speed. Doesn't have great bend. He's super lean with long arms. I just don't see. I mean, he's not even productive this year. Like, not even close to being productive. I just don't get it. I don't get what happened. This is a guy who can't get drafted this year. Like, he's got one more year of eligibility. Like, he's got to go back. He just can't get drafted. But
I don't think so. He's going back. I think he transferred. Just different situation, probably.
I think they should all transfer. If you've got talent, and you feel like you've got talent at one point in time, like, get the heck out of there. Because you can't have they're not going to have a one-year turnaround from this.
No.
Almost is going to need a lot of guys on the defensive line here very soon.
Go take Princely's spot. Last one, Anto Saka from Northwestern.
Yeah, and this stinks. I mean, you know why I like Anto Saka a lot, but he's been AWOL for a month now. Like, he's just not been productive. I've watched some Northwestern games during that time, like hoping to see him. And when he's in there, he just doesn't make much of an impact. And part of it, I think, is the lack of pass first plan. He did have a sack this past week, which was nice to see. Like, there's some levels of life still, but he really needs to figure out the pass first plan part of his game. He really needs to get that together. And I mean, I don't know. The guys playing ahead of him are not that much better than him. So I just don't know why he's not seeing more snaps, really. I mean, maybe it's partially because of this instability to his game, but I'll be curious to see if there were some kind of injuries, some kind of extra stuff playing into the middle of this year, because the month of November was not very kind to him.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know what they're doing because he's so talented. But he should get out of there.
Yeah, I think he's a guy who, get, you know, like I said, find yourself a nice team to go transfer to. And, you know, maybe you end up being trained more on Texas and you're not going to be an NFL guy. You'll be a late round guy. Or maybe you'll be a player who plays 45 snaps a game and you just end up with 40 plus pressures, 7 or 8.5 sacks, and you end up being a nice quality second or third round pick. Like, I think you have to take the shot because it's not happening in Northwestern right now for basically anyone. So I wouldn't be doing that if I'm you.
They're not playing him. Like, it's hard to get in. Like, it's like 15 snaps in a game. It's like, it's hard to get in a rhythm with that. We're both big fans of him. He's very talented. He's playing in the Big Ten too. Like, it's not like a conference where it's like Trey Moore at UTSA. I'm like, how much does this crap translate?
Yeah, you know, it does. Like, and didn't for Trey Moore, really. Trey Moore actually had a better November, I think, than...
He's been better as of late.
He's been better, but for Stock, I think you just need to change the scenery.
Because he transfers up to, I'm just making this up, Oregon. He's got 2 years there. And we see the talent, and they're going to have other pass rushers. Like, a team like that. Because I think he enters the portal probably as one of the top pass rushers. I don't know why they're not playing him. I have no idea, because he is their best player on their entire team. Right? Like, he just is. Right? Like, he hasn't been productive, but they're not. They have all year, we've talked about this. Like, are they trying to keep him a secret? Because this guy, when he's on, is as good of a pass rusher.
He's on fire.
And
Jordan Burks plan, where Jordan Burks had all these traits in the world, but he finally put together in year 5 at Oregon. You know, I wonder if that's like, if you go there, because you've seen the development happen for something like that. And Uyanga, like, is really good there. Like, they have legit talent outside of Burks as a pass rush there. That would be like a great landing spot. I don't know if it happens, but that'd be essentially a best case landing spot for him developmentally.
100%. Oh, I agree. So those are risers and fallers from this month. Now prospects watched. Went with four defenders, LSU and Toledo. Who would have ever thought the second school would have multiple defenders we'd be talking about? Zy Alexander, Braden Swinson, Maxon Hook, and Emmanuel McNeil Ward. We'll start with Zy Alexander. Was he Southeastern Louisiana transfer to LSU?
Yeah. All former All Southland Conference players. So definitely transferring up. He's playing well too. Like, he transferred up and he's legit. It's translated for him. But not to the extent that I've just, like, people are buying into it, I think. Like, people are talking about him being top 100, top 8 corner in this class, I've heard. I just don't see it. Like, I gave him a late 4th round grade. I really don't see top 100 player. Especially, like, speed to me is a little bit worrisome. He tends to recover well late in the routes, but he can get stacked pretty easily in that 10 to 20 yard range on verticals. I'm trying to remember what game am I thinking about? I think it might have been Ole Miss. Yeah, but there was one game where he just got beat. Let me pull up real quick to see if I can remember. But there was one game where he got beat pretty consistently. I don't think the speed is there for him right now. And that's really worrisome to me, because, again, with these corners who have the size, and, like, because he's good in press, but he's not fantastic in press either. Like, if he was a shutdown press guy, I may be more willing to buy into it. But he really has not been this terrific press corner. Like, he's kind of hit or miss in that area. I think the game I'm thinking about was Ole Miss, I'm pretty sure, but could have been Alabama as well, where he got beat several times. Yeah, it was Ole Miss. I got to have him down twice here, where he got beat downfield for would-be touchdowns, but it was either a missed throw or a drop pass. And so I think the vertical passing game is really good at exploiting some of his physical limitations in that area. Which is why I'm not really buying into him being a top 100 guy. I do think he has excellent arm length, really good influence at the catch point, not much tightness in his hips at all, so he's pretty good in terms of opening himself up and making transitions. I think the vision instincts in zone are really good. And he's great at crowding defenders quickly, recognizing throws in front of him, getting up, getting close, working out of zone coverage that way. The closing speed is really good. He tends to not bite on route fakes and stutter goes, that kind of stuff. that length will sometimes produce really good two-handed jams at the line of scrimmage, but again, it's really inconsistent with his actual hand placement at times. So that creates some misses. He's really good at ball tracking, and I mentioned that he does a good job recovering in the very last bit of that route. So if it's a vertical route, he'll get back into phase in the final, say, 5 yards or so to make a play on the football. But he does lose some separation in intermediate levels. Some of the negatives for him, he's an older player with a torn ACL in his past, doesn't have great speed, inaccurate punches and press, some really poor effort in run defense at times. He's not a twitchy athlete. There can be some delayed transitions when receivers cross his face, and he will, again, allow separation in that middle portion of the route. There are issues with against back shoulder fades with him where he doesn't necessarily locate the football in time and man coverage downfield. And then he will give an excessive cushion off man at times. He'll give up chunk plays underneath because he just allows too much cushion. I think part of that is because of maybe worried about getting beat over the top. And then his deceleration on comebacks and curls is not where you want it to be. Ryan Williams is really fast. Like, he's got great speed, but he just like totally blew by him in the Alabama game. And it happened twice. So I have trouble buying into him being this top under player. I just don't see it.
Do you think we're talking, so 4.55 over under, is he going to be faster or slower than that?
4.55. So I think he'll actually be slower.
Yeah, I mean, I do too.
Yeah, it's interesting because 4.55. Yeah, I think he'll be a little bit slower than that. You say 4.45 or 4.55? 5.5?
Yeah, 5.5.
Yeah, I think he might be a little slower than that. It's hard. That's where Shaw Smith Wade was 4.54 last year. And I could see him being like right in that same testing range. Ryan Watts is 4.53. Not that you can be a good player at the time. Like Tariq still is playing some decent football, and he ran a 4.52. But I think he's definitely a guy who's in the 4.5s, and he's not 4.5 flat. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, some guys, like, no matter what, how they test, they just play slow. And that's how I think. Do you think he's a fourth round pick?
No, I think he goes probably third round. I think he'll go higher than I have him graded. But yeah, I have real concerns there. I feel bad because it feels like I've trashed the last like 4 or 5 corners we've talked about here. But these like Jacob Parrish, Alexander, Jalen Smith, I just don't see these guys. I don't feel that. Same as Spark, I did watching some of the other corners. Like I got a little bit excited for like Upton Stout, and I don't feel the same way about these guys. Granted, I had Stout graded much lower, but you know.
I know what you're saying. Braden Swinson, Oregon transfer to LSU.
Yeah, really bit of a roller coaster. I loved him early in the year. I went back to watch some of his tape, and initially thought, oh, it's not as good as I remember it being. But by the end of the process, I was like, no, it was as good as I thought it was going to be. So he's a really unique player. I think he's a bit more scheme specific because he doesn't have great size. He's not going to be a player who's going to set the edge at a high level, but he plays really well in space. You watch him get isolated against Jalen Milroe on the edge when they're running quarterback designed runs against Alabama. And he is keeping pace of Milroe to the sideline and he's containing those plays. He does a really good job. And you put in the option, he's a good player to contain the option. So he's really good with playing in space and run defense, not great at stack and shed per se. But you want to play on the outside and play, you know, just in space. He's really good, I think, at playing the ball that way. And it's partially because he's just got great speed, great acceleration, long arms, so he has a good tackle radius. He's an explosive level athlete with good change of direction as well. So that all helps him win in space. And as a pass rusher, again, long arms, excellent speed and burst, so he can win with speed rush on the outside. Not great bend. I think he's got better bend than Jordan Birch, but obviously nowhere near elite. You know, so it's good enough, I think, for the caliber player he is, because he does tend to dip the inside shoulder and kind of manufacture ways to get low with his frame. So it's good enough to get by on that side. He will counter to the B gap quite a bit, and he's usually very effective that way. He can use straight speed to counter to the B gap, or he will pry it open with the power dripping through his hands. He's got a good amount of pop. He's not maybe as explosive on contact as Jordan Birch. No, I'm kind of confident with those two guys now. He's not as explosive on contact, but he does tend to generate good displacement. And he obviously has longer arms than Birch does to do so. You go back and you watch the South Carolina tape, which I actually didn't while writing this because I'd watched that game probably 2 or 3 times already this year. But he is, and that UCLA game as well, he's constantly just knocking guys off the line of scrimmage, opening the B gap. So there's a good amount of pop to work with there. His pass rush plan is not as diverse as you want to be, I would say. There's a lot of two-arm bull rushes, two-hand swipes. There's swims, chops, rips, speed rushes as well. It's not, and there's, I think, cross-chop in there too. It's not quite as diverse as you want. It doesn't have quite as many hand counters as you want, but I think it's a really good starting point for the caliber of athlete he is with the build he has, where he's got enough mass on his body to generate power, and he's got long arms, and I've already mentioned like that upper body strength to apply pop on contact is really impressive. So great overall athlete. I gave him a early third round evaluation. I think he will go in the second round if everything checks out. I know he was suspended for the first half of the Florida game for like team-based reasons, so I do think there'll be some questions there. But he plays on the field with the right demeanor. He plays as a high-motor guy on the field, and I think a little bit of that suspension was going to like arguing with Kelly on the sideline when LSU was having a tough loss. So I don't think that it's all bad character stuff. I think it's probably more likely frustration with how the season played out, if I had to bet. So
yeah, I'd probably get suspended if I was on LSU with Brian Kelly, so I can't blame him for that. Maxon Hook and Emmanuel McNeil Ward. How about two Toledo safeties after they had Quinyon Mitchell? Was Quinyon Mitchell just good because he had other guys around him? No.
Quinyon Mitchell, a production of the system? No.
Right,
system,
yeah. Now he's got DeGene and Blankenship, and that's the only reason he's good again. So we are Quinyon Mitchell haters. No, kidding. Yeah, take me through Hook and then McNeil Ward.
So Hook, I gave a late fourth to mid-fifth round grade. So I like him, but there's some limitations there, and I'll talk about a little bit about McNeil Warren, who I gave mid-fourth, early fifth. So that's like a quarter to half round difference in these players. Maxon Hook is a fifth-year player. He did suffer a injury last year, cost him five games. He's missed a couple of games in 2022 as well. He's a bit on the smaller side, so I think that you have to be careful of those injuries. Unofficially, is at 6'2", 203, so that's probably like 5'11", 195. 200 pounds, somewhere in that range. He plays basically all over for them. They'll have him step down in the box and almost operate as a weak side linebacker. He will play off man over the slot. He'll play deep middle of the field safety. He'll play too high as well. So he's got experience at a variety of coverages. He's a two-time team captain. He's basically done everything for them. He's played in all the special teams units as well. The arm length appears to check the box for safeties. He's really fluid with his hips, great ball tracking, and he's really good at reading the quarterback's eyes. He does high point and rise to meet the ball. Well, he's got really good range and coverage because of his speed. I think a little bit of, he's not as fast as Billy Bowman was. I think he's actually better in tight coverages than Billy Bowman. I'm copping the two because I saw Hook in single high a little bit. So I'm kind of looking at that range and speed. Bowman better in space, probably a bit better of a ball hawk, but Hook to me can play and can play more in the box if you need him to. And he's better playing some tight coverages because he has a bit more natural fluidity to him than Bowman does. Hook will anticipate and step down to cut off throwing lanes. He has the speed to carry slot options vertically from off-man coverage. Takes really good angles and run defense with great closing burst. And that range he has in coverage definitely does translate to run defense as well. Now, he's really good at making one-on-one tackles in space, and he's willing to do the dirty work coming downhill in run defense. He can match up with tight ends because of his athletic traits, and he does have genuine sideline to sideline range in run defense as well, and he will run the alley to make a tough tackle. So he plays football the right way, and he's got really good character. I don't know, like, if the size testing will not be great for him. I think the athletic testing will be good. Maybe not great, but it'll be good. Then it gives for him, I think he's still developing anticipation skills in man coverage, so like that might be a limiting factor for him. He will bite in a route fix occasionally, and he will sometimes drop his shoulder instead of wrapping up as a tackler. He hasn't really had a ton of exposure to tight man coverage in the slot right now. It's a lot of off man stuff, which is fine. Like, I don't think that's going to be a true negative factor for him, but I wouldn't really trust him to play too much tight man coverage against slot receivers, maybe more against tight ends. I think you could experiment with that. And his eagerness to come downhill and chase the ball can backfire occasionally with some bad angles, but I would rather have to reel him in than teach him to come downhill and play the run. And then the size limits his ability to separate from blockers. So it's mostly size limitations and just trying to work on some discipline stuff.
I'm curious because We'll get to see about the Senior Bowl. You know, how well he's going to test as a small school guys. Because I don't feel like safeties can always show enough at these events. Testing will be important for him. You know, he doesn't have elite level size like McNeil Ward does. Like, you watch it and you're like, holy cow, this guy is massive out there. I give them a lot of credit, though. They are developing defensive backs at a high, you know, high level.
Yeah, and they have some really like unique talents as well. Like, we're not going to go in depth on him, but Darius Alexander, the interior defensive lineman for them, I give him a mid fifth round grade, so I don't love him too much. But you look at him and you go, "Oh, is that just small school Alfred Collins out there?" It kind of feels like that. Like, he'll probably go fourth or third or fourth round because he has that level of size. So they have some really good players at Toledo.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about him as a defensive lineman, but like, you have. Last year on their defense, they had four legitimate top 100 potential prospects. Yeah. Right? Like, I don't know if, you know, if Quinyon's the only one who does, but like, I would not be stunned if the other three went in the top 100.
No, it wouldn't be shocking to me at all. Like, and because again, McNeil Warren, I think, is not as, there's some question marks. We'll get into him in a second, but like, him, Hook, obviously he's the more attractive one because like the traits, you have to develop him a lot more, I think, but he has the traits and Alexander, like, not a guy I'm super high on. Kind of like I wasn't super high on Collins earlier in the process, but you put together like a highlight reel of Darius Alexander, you can understand why. Like, he can understand why he's probably going to go top 100.
Yeah. Get to McNeil Warren. What were your thoughts on him?
Yeah, so obviously a really good size to start off with. Unofficially listed 6'2", 210. Good arm length as well. Really good downhill trigger and great closing burst. So a really good move, like linear mover at his size. Quickly closes from off-hand coverage to shut down throwing lanes. He's really eager to step down and fit the run. He's a good wrap-up tackler. In coverage, he actually baits quarterbacks into some poor throws. There was a play. Oh, I'm not going to remember the game now. What game was it? Where he basically, I think it might have been Northern Illinois or Western Kentucky, where he turned, I think it was Western Kentucky, where he turned his back to the quarterback. And then kind of wheeled out. So it's like turning his back that he's going to run to the middle of the field and then wheels out to the fade route on the sideline and makes an interception. Pretty sure that's just, I hope I'm not confusing the two safeties, but he has some of those little plays where he will bait guys into bad throws like that. And he will make those kind of unique plays. Like, you are creating the turnover back on stuff. You are not just benefiting from a bad throw or a bad decision. You are creating the turnover with those kind of plays. And he makes those right now. Which is really unique for a player who was not super experienced going into the year, I think. So he's good at creating those kind of turnovers. He has a history of forcing fumbles as well, which is great to look at. He's got that punch and rip down really well as a tackler. He's a good tackler as well because he squares up to make tackles. So he's going to be a good asset against the run, against short passes. He will blow up screen plays as well. He does a good job working in the box to pick through traffic and find the ball here and he's mostly good at seeing through eye candy from off-man coverage because he does play primarily off-man and gets chances to play over the slot. But he will sometimes bite down occasionally, but generally does a good job not biting on any eye candy in the backfield. That quick closing burst helps him out when he keeps stuff in front of him. He's a high-effort player in pursuit. Good recognition and anticipation to handle short routes as well. You watch him against Harold Fan Jr. I think this is where I kind of felt good and bad for I just calling him EMW on my notes because I didn't want to type the whole thing out. But this is where I felt good and bad against Harold Fan. He obviously rerouted Fan a couple times where he's just shutting the route down. And so he's getting into Fan's pads. He's shutting the route down early at the last scrimmage, which is great. There's some really good jams on tape. But there were also times where he just gets beat off the line, frankly. So I think he's a player who's going to have to play back a little bit more. Because he does have moments where he can mirror routes from off-man coverage, quickly close and limit yak, or even maybe attempt to block throws. He has that good arm length. And he does navigate like switch releases and stuff like that at the line of scrimmage pretty well from depth. He's got good eyes, good understanding, but I think there's some physical limitations here in coverage. He does tend to take poor angles to the ball. He does struggle to stack and shed blocks. You know, he has pretty good size, doesn't really maximize his arm length in that sense. Doesn't have silent range. I don't think he has top end speed. There were a couple times for Fan and it just was faster than him off the line. And he had a step on him and he beat him a couple times that way. So I am a little bit worried about the top end speed. I'll be curious to see how he tests that way. He does not do a good job mirroring matching releases and press coverage. That might just be an experience thing, but I do think it's partially an athletic thing where he's, you know, he's built pretty tall. He's not a super twitchy athlete, doesn't have great speed. I don't think he's got a great vertical leap either. So I'll be curious to see if testing maybe doesn't line up with his on-field profile. Because I think there are some limitations there physically that might push him to a more limited role in the NFL than he's played in college.
Yeah, I'm more with you on, I don't know how athletic we're talking here. And that's my concern with him a little bit.
I think he looks big, fast on tape and hits well, but I don't think he's going to test that well.
No, I didn't think so either. But like, boy, does he look like a man amongst boys out there. I wonder if he ends up transferring.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, I don't know, because they developed so well, like you mentioned. Like, I just don't know if they feel the need to transfer, honestly, from Toledo anymore.
Yeah, like, we just had Quinn Young go in the first round. Like, why would you need a transfer? And they'll have those two guys drafted. Like, just stay here. And yeah, like, play your same role. Like, don't go to a different defense where they ask you to do something you're not used to and it hurts your stock.
Well, you never know what happens. Like, I always worry about the guys who transfer that I like, because if you are a talented player who transfers to a bigger program, there's always a chance you might just get beat out by a five-star freshman. Like, there's always a shot you just might not play even at all. So that always worries me. I'm more the guys who I push to transfer, the dudes who are not playing enough but are clearly talented. If you are playing a lot but have a ton of talent and you want to transfer up, even though you're dominating your current level, that worries me a little bit. Sometimes that does come back to bite you. We're not going to talk about these two guys, but I do want to mention them because I did study them. I just want to bring them up real quick. Mm-hmm. Savion Jones and Paris Shand from LSU. Jones, an edge rusher. Shand, a interior defensive lineman. Both really toolsy players. But you talk about like size, arm length type stuff, combinations, that speed maybe as well. Neither of them have any kind of polish whatsoever. And Shand doesn't have much bend to him. He's kind of just like a straight up tall guy with long arms, which we, as you know, LSU defenders like that can sometimes get drafted really high. But I expect both of them will get drafted because they have those physical traits, but I think they both got UDFA scores from me, or like day three grades. Like, they're not, they're just not great players. Like, there's no technical polish really to them.
I did not like Shan. I haven't liked him since his tape at Arizona, but I actually have like Savion Jones. Again, it goes back to what do I like versus what you like. And Josiah Stewart types more your speed, and I like my more Savion. Which Savion Jones is not my calling card for the guys who have 70-inch arms, but I am a little higher on him than, higher on him than you. But.
Yeah, I think Shan's point is like he just doesn't bend at all. He doesn't really. He has like a one speed kind of guy, but
yeah,
I do think Jones has legit pass rush moves. He has the physicality. He plays with good motor. Like, there's stuff to like about his game. And he makes some splash plays, but I just don't think he does enough for me to really like. Like, I just think there's too much. You got Swinson on one side, you got Jones on the other. I'm constantly looking at Swinson. I'm just like, Jones, like, it's that, like the meme with the stick where you're poking. You're like, just do something. Like, please do something.
Yeah, no. He never has, his production has never matched just his physical tool. So
no, but you get, I think pre-draft is going to do a lot for him though. Like, yeah. I think that there's a reason why Nagy kept tweeting about him early in the year. It's like, he's going to help himself a lot pre-draft.
Yeah, they always do. So thank you for listening to the Draft Report. Catch us every Wednesday talking all things NFL draft related.